I will be discussing the second part of the same project that Ali was discussing, which is part of the same model to connect disadvantaged men of color to healthcare services in Upper Manhattan. And so while Ali was discussing the end of getting men who are in prison reentry programs connected to healthcare, this part of the project was looking at how can we make the supply of healthcare services more male-friendly and creating places in Upper Manhattan that are going to be a good place for men to access healthcare. I have no relationships to disclose. So the objectives today are to discuss the importance of male-friendly healthcare delivery and services and what that means by a male-friendly service and how that can impact healthcare for men. And then I'll discuss the implementation process of our capacity building intervention at a clinic in Harlem. So first of all, the foundation for this work is based off of clear evidence that you've heard already in this session that men's sexual health care needs are not being adequately addressed. And the PI for this project, Dr. Deborah Kalmus, who couldn't be here today, she did an analysis of the 2002 National Survey for Family Growth on this issue, looking at men who have had sex with women in the last 3 months and their access to sexual and reproductive health care services, and found that not only were only about a little less than half reporting that they received services, the majority of those services were a testicular exam, so not really including STD, HIV, or any type of reproductive health care services. So, you know, knowing that there's a strong need for men to have access to care led her to conduct some focus group research with men to kind of get more illustrative context behind why men aren't seeking health care services. So, in her work, she's found that men's healthcare seeking is deterred by a multiplicity of factors, including economic barriers, masculinity constructions, and the lack of welcoming and gender-sensitive sexual healthcare delivery sites for men. So from the focus groups that she conducted with men in Upper Manhattan, she found that some of the issues around masculinity constructions posed a big barrier. So for example, this guy here says, you know, some guys have too much pride, I won't go to the doctor. Some guys make vows that they will not go to the doctor, they can't be hurt. You know, like they're impenetrable. So to sustain that image, they just say, hey, okay, I'm not gonna go. I'm gonna deal with it, I'm just gonna suck it up. Another man said, like a girl could go into a specific clinic and she could be like, well, I was there to get birth control. But if a guy coming out, people are gonna get the negative outlook first, like, yeah, you hit. So a lot of barriers around men not wanting to be associated with going to sexual health care service and this assumption that those types of clinical services are intended for women. And then he might think he can't go because he doesn't have any insurance. He doesn't have any money. So it's like, can I go? Is it all right if I go? So you really don't know what's available to you. So in constructing this project, we decided to come up with a definition of what we thought meant male-friendly services to kind of address the supply-side barrier. So there's a couple components that we think contribute to male-friendly services, and one is the physical environment. So for example, are there posters on the walls that depict images of men, and specifically men of color? What are the magazines in the waiting rooms? Are they all fashion magazines or magazines that seem to be intended more towards female patients? And are there health education materials in the waiting room that actually address men's healthcare needs? And then clinic protocols. Is health education part of the clinical encounter? When men come in for a primary healthcare visit, are they going to be screened for STIs even if they're asymptomatic? And is that STI testing linked to HIV testing? A lot of times when women come in for healthcare services, especially even primary care, there's an integrated family planning component, but that's not always the case for men. And then staff trainings, making sure that staff at a clinic understand the particular barriers that we just discussed that men have in coming for a sexual health care visit. And training staff to be able to effectively communicate with men about the importance of coming in for sexual health care, kind of reinforcing the positive aspects of accessing that specific type of care. So this project is part of the Young Men's Health Initiative at Columbia, which Allison mentioned, which is a collaboration between the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia and New York Presbyterian Hospital. And the centerpiece of the initiative is the Young Men's Clinic in Upper Manhattan, which she mentioned. It has about 4,000 clinical visits and has really been known as a very successful model of healthcare services, specifically for men. And a big part of the initiative is understanding that health is not just about the clinical encounter. A lot of our conception of health has to do with men having access to legal services, employment, housing. So we've really developed, particularly Dr. Bruce Armstrong, who's the director of the Young Men's Clinic, has developed strong ties with a lot of CBOs in Upper Manhattan that do workforce development and these types of trainings. And so HBA in Central Harlem is the Helen B. Atkinson Health Center that I'll be talking about today, but we're also working with a clinic that's affiliated with Columbia Presbyterian called the Farrell Family Health Center to also introduce training and technical assistance around male-friendly services. And just real quickly, the basis of the model for the Young Men's Clinic that we wanted to really translate over to the Helen B. Atkinson Health Center has these five core components. One is empowerment, so kind of reaffirming men's decisions to come in and access healthcare. The clinical and psychosocial, so you know, we have at the Young Men's Clinic a full-time social worker and community health navigator that help get men connected to other healthcare services or other services that we consider part of healthcare services, which are those other community-based organizations in the area. Along those lines, community partnerships and breaking down silos, so making sure that we have this integrated concept of health. Health education and teachable moments. So Dr. Armstrong, the director of the Young Men's Health Clinic, he has really developed this very, very innovative waiting room health education component where men who come into the waiting room are actually getting sexual health education before they even make it to the doctor. So really capitalizing on all education opportunities when a man comes into the clinic. And then service-based research, which is what you know we're doing with this project here at Helen B. Atkinson to try and find best practices using research principles to kind of improve our programs. So our goal was to determine whether, you know, we could assess the baseline male friendliness, provide a training and technical assistance intervention, and evaluate to see if it was effective in improving the male friendliness of the clinic. And we specifically did this in Harlem because of high rates of STIs, HIV, and gonorrhea rates, for example. Among men in Harlem are about three times higher than they are men in other communities in New York. Even for older men, for older black men, for example, in Harlem, gonorrhea rates are considerably higher than they are for younger white men throughout the rest of Manhattan. And we also decided to partner with the Helen B. Atkinson Health Center because the director of the clinic had shown an interest. He decided to start a Saturday men's clinic, and he was really interested in partnering with us to kind of introduce the kind of elements that we were using at the Young Men's Clinic over to his clinic. So the assessment itself had four main strategies. We used closed-ended questions of survey. The first time it was pencil and paper, the second time we did it online with staff. And then we also did a closed-ended exit survey with male patients when they were finishing their visit. We also had open-ended discussions with staff on specific issues. We did clinic observation to look at the physical environment and review forms and other types of materials, like health education materials at the clinic. And then we reviewed clinic protocols and written forms. So we did the training and technical assistance based on the results that we got from our baseline assessment, and then we're doing two follow-up assessments. We've only done one of the follow-ups at this point. And we, based on the work with the Young Men's Health Initiative, we identified eight core criteria to indicate male friendliness. So the first was discussion and planning for male services. So do the staff think it's important for the clinic environment to be male friendly? Do they feel that their services are inviting to men? Second, we did staff training. Have the staff been trained on how to do a sexual history, for example, with a man? Access, are services offered at times that are convenient for men? And is the special men's clinic that they introduced on Saturdays, is it well advertised? Staff, are there any male health educators or clinicians? Referrals, does the clinic maintain referral lists and are men referred to some of these other great CBOs in the area? Men's health promotion education materials, are there education materials that deal specifically with men's sexual and reproductive health issues? Sexual health services, are men routinely offered STI testing, even if they're asymptomatic? Is urine-based STI testing available? And are sex histories regularly updated during the visit? And then marketing and outreach for mail services was the last core criteria. So we wanted to know, does the clinic advertise a commitment to serving men? Do they encourage male patients as well as female patients to tell the men they know about the clinic? So we identified the measurement for the assessment criteria, which were the surveys. We ended up getting, at baseline, 24 staff and 61 male patients. And we yielded an assessment based on those criteria using SPSS to analyze the survey data, and we made a matrix of our qualitative findings. So the key areas of strength at baseline were that actually the men were very satisfied. They felt that the overall environment of the clinic was welcoming to men. They said that they would definitely recommend the clinic to men they know. It's open at times that are convenient for their schedule, and they found the clinic services to be affordable, 68%, so not perfectly great, but. And then we found that the staff were committed to male friendliness. So 71% of staff strongly agreed that it's important for the clinic and its services to be male friendly. But we also found a number of areas to improve male friendliness. For example, 40% of men said that they did not receive counseling or education the day they came into the clinic. And 25%, one in four, said they had never received any education when they had come into the clinic. And then revisits, we found, were an underutilized opportunity for health education. So while 87% of new patients actually got education, only half of returning patients received that education. And based off of prior evidence, men sometimes take a longer time to get comfortable communicating with the provider, specifically around sexual and reproductive health. So revisits are actually a really important opportunity to continue to ask men these questions in terms of sexual histories and health education around sexual history, instead of just making the assumption that they'll be the same answers that were given during the initial visit. And we also found that only 44% of men reported ever being talked to about STD testing on the day of their survey. And while 100% of the staff reported that men are offered HIV tests whenever they test for STIs, nearly 40% of staff reported that men are not offered STI testing when they are tested for HIV. So we really found that there was not a strong linkage between HIV and STI testing. And that was something that we found as an area for improvement. And then with the physical environment, we did see that there wasn't a lot of positive images of men, you know, and it very much felt like a family planning clinic that was catered towards women and also for the pediatric patients. And then an important aspect that we do at the Young Men's Clinic in Washington Heights is what we call inreach, and really capitalizing on men who come in for services as a target to get other men to come in, to tell other men they know, and also just the women who come into the clinic, are we getting them to tell other men they know about the clinic and their services. So we found that, 61% of staff said that they encouraged male clients to tell other men they knew about the clinic, only 31% of the male clients themselves said that that had happened. So the proposed changes that we wanted to incorporate into the intervention was hiring a health educator that could be specifically focus on men's sexual and reproductive health education, clarifying the clinical protocol for men's sexual health services, so making sure that a sexual history is conducted at the first visit, no matter if it's a primary healthcare visit or a specific STI visit, and then repeated if they come back for STI testing or even for a follow-up annual visit. Designating key sexual health take-home messages to be widely disseminated to men, and then disseminating inReach materials. We designed a series of materials that men could give to other men they know, like small little index cards they could keep in their wallet that they could pass to show men, that show where the clinic is and what type of services it provides, and also just posters that advertise the men's clinic itself. Oh, and one really important part that we decided to incorporate in terms of inReach was working with the dental clinic. A lot of men use the dental clinic that was downstairs. So we actually talked to the dentist about making sure that she encouraged the men to check into the other healthcare services, sexual reproductive specifically healthcare services that men could access there. So we did a series of trainings with clinical staff to increase awareness and delivery of the new clinical sexual health protocol for men and improve the quality of sexual health services. And so we did those with health educators and counselors, kind of training them on key counseling strategies for working with men around these issues, and also with clinicians themselves on how to conduct a sexual history with men. And we did repeat follow-up trainings with these staff members. We developed a series of health education materials for staff to use and incorporated that teachable moments concept that we use at the Young Men's Clinic, so using the waiting room as an opportunity to promote men's sexual health. And then we developed a series of marketing materials like the palm cards I described and the poster that Ali showed. I have one here that advertise the men's services and also have a list of the key sexual health messages. And these were posted all around the clinic, including in the dental health clinic. So I'm just going to show a couple examples of some of the materials we developed. This is a PowerPoint module that could be put on all the computers for providers and also for counselors to use when they were working with men. So if they had time to refer men to other healthcare or to other CBOs and other services in the area, they could use this pretty easy-to-use tool. So for example, they'd have this screen up, and let's say that a man was in need of GED services. They could click on this link, and then they could print out, they all have printers, they could print out this information about this particular service and where to access it. And this is the logo for the clinic. They could go back to this main screen. So pretty easy to use service for the clinicians and counselors alike. There we go. And then we made a waiting room DVD that kind of self-spooled and had good music in the background that discussed these kind of key sexual health messages that we identified. There we go. And this is a DVD that actually got really positive feedback from the clients and female clients alike. I would kind of sit and listen and see what people were thinking while in the waiting room while it was being played, and I would overhear a mom talking to her son about, oh, did you know about this? Did you know about emergency contraception? And kind of engendered some good conversation. So from our process evaluation, we found that the majority of staff thought that the trainings we provided were very helpful in their clinical practice, and they found the partnership between our team and the clinic to be useful, and they'd even recommend that the other clinics within their network of clinics actually partner with us on this project. But we did find that there was no increase among the men themselves in our follow-up survey on how male-friendly they found the clinic to be, which it was very high at baseline. And there was actually a decrease among the providers and staff in terms of their perception of the clinic male-friendliness. And one hypothesis we have is that we did so much training on what with the staff on what male-friendliness means that perhaps after doing the intervention, they realized that maybe they weren't as male-friendly as they had thought all along. There was no increase in the proportion of male clients who reported using sexual health services, and it didn't seem like the inreach was quite taking hold yet. So the main challenges that we had were staff turnover, just like we saw with Exodus. The medical director and the clinic manager left within about a month of us starting the intervention, so that cost us significant times in terms of relationship building. The staff was understaffed. There was only one clinic social worker, and her funding went specifically towards teens and not towards men. So there's this issue of having staff that it's not a part of the job description to work with men on these issues. And also the health educator that had been hired part of this project, she was only half-time, and her Title X funding really was specific towards women, so she wasn't able to dedicate enough of her time to work with men. It's also the clinic protocol and determining who has the accountability. We had a hard time determining, is it the clinic manager who has this decision? Is it the medical director? It seemed to fall a lot along with the individual providers, and that was a hard sell for a lot of them who really wanted to focus on chronic disease and other issues related to primary health care. So our next steps is we're going to try and get buy-in at all levels for clinic protocol. We're adding a monitoring and accountability system to really make sure that the steps that we're introducing are taking hold. They are actually in the process of hiring a full-time health educator who will have funding specific to working on men's sexual reproductive health issues. We're redosing some of the key intervention elements, and we're going to do a second follow-up assessment. And that's it. Thank you.